James Anderson, the Marion County naturalist and a great friend of the radio station, and I like to consider him a friend of my own. Hey, James, we were talking off the air about, a not very pleasant thing, where how seeds go through the digestive system of a bird, and it actually helps the seed because it kind of scours off the outside of the seed, and then they defecate, and that seed gets planted. Now, does that happen a lot within nature?
Yes, and I was telling you, a lot of plants depend on animals eating that seed or fruit or whatever, because, that digestive tract is going to dissolve that outer layer, and then when that animal discretes that seed out, it destroys that layer, and then so that inner layer can sprout through. Pawpaws is a really great example of that.
Now, you said they like darkness.
Pawpaws, yeah.
Not totally dark, but...
Yeah, they're like very shade-loving plants,
And you said buckeyes are shade-loving.
For the most part, yes. Now, I have seen buckeyes in open areas, but they have been found in ravine areas, and they can handle shade.
Now, buckeyes, what is the... Is that a seed, the buckeye? Okay.
Yeah, and squirrels can eat it.
Oh, okay.
And
people shouldn't. Right?
No, people shouldn't. But it's funny, when I went to Kentucky, when I did my first internship down there, they always said that there was one side that was edible, but the one side was toxic, but we didn't know which side it was.
But
the squirrels knew. And I said, oh, the Kentuckians, they're a fun bunch of people.
That's mean to tell you that. What are you going to do if you ever get stuck out in the wilderness and you have to eat a buckeye? Let's see. Do I eat the side with the little button on it, or do I eat the other side? You're going to be either dead or you're going to be happy. I don't know which. excuse me. I have to look over here and make sure I have the right...
I remember what we were once talking about, the monarchs.
Oh, yeah, the monarchs.
Because that's what started the seed conversation.
Yeah, I was asking, what are they doing now that they're down in South America?
Yeah, so since they're migrated down there, they're kind of in a dormant hibernational state, and they're just kind of chilling out until about mid to late February. Then they'll breed, and then they will start to head back up to the U.S., and I was telling you that they'll usually will make about mid to north Texas, and then they'll die, and then their kids, they will go through that whole cycle, and then they'll start migrating back up. So it takes about three cycles, generation cycles, to make it up to Ohio.
Now, you said their kids. Are their kids, do their kids come out in South America, or do they show up in that Texas?
In Texas.
Okay, so there is a reason for the monarchs to fly to Texas, because they got to drop their babies.
Yeah.
Okay.
And then the ones from Texas will make it to whatever middle United States, probably Minnesota.
Kansas or something.
Kansas, yeah. And then they'll kind of stop and do that again, and then they'll make it up to Ohio. And then the generation one will start all over again.
That's good.
It takes four generations to complete the whole migration cycle.
And is that 1 year, or is it?
Yes.
Okay, so that's 1 year.
Huh. About a year, year and a half, yeah.
Okay. We never did figure out what happened to our locusts, or what, not locusts.
Our cicadas?
Cicadas.
Oh, well, they're in their hibernational dormant state.
Yeah, but how come we didn't get any here?
I never found an answer. I've asked some of our old OSU professors. They really didn't know as well. Someone said it had to do with the frost line, that we get a harder frost. But then it didn't make sense. Green Camp got the... in Prospect area, got all the
got a lot.
Cicadas, but then we didn't, and they're
farther south than we are.
Yeah, so I don't know. I don't understand, but it's interesting why we didn't get the 17-year-old cicadas in Marion.
So being a naturalist doesn't mean you know every answer.
No. There's still things I need to learn.
Oh, my. Well, now, we're talking about the butterflies. Are there other butterflies that do that similar thing?
Most of our butterflies here, they're hibernating right now.
Now the little white ones that we see,
the cabbage white,
yeah,
they're hibernating.
They're hibernating.
Yeah, okay. They're in their chrysalis or their cocoon stage. That's why I know we were talking about last month about leave the leaves.
Yeah.
So because a lot of times they'll crystallize into the leaf litter, leaf pile, and then when you're backing it up and sending it away, I mean there goes your butterfly moth population.
Yeah, and you don't want that. You want them to pollinate your tomato plants.
That's right. Yeah.
What critters pollinate the best? Bees, I assume.
It depends on the plants.
Oh, does it? Okay.
Yeah. But I would probably agree with you. Bees probably give the most credit. And then, of course, butterflies. But then some of our ones that don't get credit are flies and beetles. But they get the nasty stuff, what I call, the ones that are not attractive, like skunk cabbage, which we've talked about before. And pawpaws, their flower is maroon in shape and its bell shape. And it smells like rotten meat, and they think beetles.
They like that, huh?
Yeah, beetles and flies pollinate them.
Okay, now, ladybugs, are they considered a beetle? I mean, they're helpful to gardens.
Yeah, they're a beetle.
Yeah, now, would they help pollinate stuff?
You know, that's a good question. Certain ones probably do, but not the ones you probably find in your house. No, they are not a pollinator.
Well, they kind of crawl around on the flowers. I suppose just by crawling around on it, they accidentally pollinate.
Especially with a lot of your vegetables.
Yeah.
Because, of course, there's aphids, attacking.
Yeah.
And that's what ladybugs love. They love aphids.
Well, now, I have been very unsuccessful with growing my zucchini.
Okay.
And I've found out the reason why I'm unsuccessful is all I get is, I think, the male flower. Apparently, I don't have the right living area. The soil isn't right for the female flower to grow.
Certain plants are like that.
Yeah, it's kind of weird. But I see bees going in and out of it, so they would pollinate it. But if you only have all males, you're not going to get any zucchini.
Yeah, certain plant species, I mean, they have male and female plants. And then like buckeyes, we were talking about earlier, they're asexuals, so they have both male and female on them. So what's nice about that is, when a bee or other pollinator's jumping from flower to flower on them, I mean, they're luckily all right there together.
Yeah.
But
pawpaws,
they have separate male and female as well.
That's interesting. I think apples have to have male and female plants. And it's interesting. That's when the bees were being... For some reason or other, we got a decrease in the bee population. I think we also got a decrease in the number of apples that were coming off the trees because you needed a bee to go from boy plant to a girl plant. Yeah, they couldn't pollinate themselves. Yeah. Well, it's...
A lot of people don't realize certain male mosquito species are pollinators.
Really?
For a lot of orchids. Yeah, so without some mosquito species, a lot of orchids would not be pollinated.
Now, I was watching, I watch a lot of YouTube.
Oh,
I ought to get a life. But I was watching how do you grow orchids. I don't know if you've ever tried to grow an orchid that you buy in a grocery store, but they usually die after a couple of weeks. Well, I found out why. Their roots need to be in the air. They do not like
orchid species.
Yeah, they do not like being in dirt, and they don't like being confined. So the lady said you need to, a little sphagnum moss around them, but leave them open to the air. So it was kind of interesting. I didn't know there were plants that needed their roots in the air.
Bald cypress.
Really?
Those. Yeah.
Okay.
Well, it's interesting about them. Their roots will go down, and then they actually will protrude up.
Yeah. So. And those are the ones that you see in the
swamp
Everglades and stuff like that. Yeah.
We get some bald cypress in Ohio. They're not native. If you go around Big Island, there's some bald cypress out there.
Do you get pythons growing in them?
Oh, I hope not. That's all we need is another invasive species.
Yeah, I was going to say probably somebody who got one for Christmas, it might be out there. But I doubt that they can live through.
They wouldn't live through our winters, but if they stay like this, then they could thrive.
Oh, I better hide Buddy. He's a pretty small puppy. Oh, now, Are there other things that we can do for our career, our bird friends that will keep them well fed? You were talking about we can supply some of our critter friends shelter by chopping up the Christmas tree.
Yeah.
But are there things during the winter that we can do other than putting out a bird feeder that can help them
eat? Bird baths.
Put a bird bath
you
out?
You can, but putting a heater is very important. And don't fill it full.
Okay.
Just put a very thin layer and put rocks because, you know, they need to drink still.
Oh, I was just thinking they need to clean themselves, but they need to drink, don't they?
Yeah. They may want to take a bath, but yeah, they need to primarily drink.
Yeah.
So, I mean, right now you wouldn't need a heater, but if we were a normal December, then yes, put in a heater in your bird bath.
Now, I've seen a lady who is very good at raising hummingbirds. Well, she doesn't raise them. They just come to her house because they like her, I guess. But she has bird baths out that have solar pumps on them that spray the water up in air.
Yeah.
And apparently they like to take a bath that way.
Yeah.
And they can actually fly through it and get cleaned off a little bit. I'd like to try that. I think
a mister.
Yeah. And they only cost like $19 or something like that.
Too pricey.
But you have to have a place to put them. Well, I'm thinking about changing my backyard and putting a long 1 foot wide row of something, some vegetable in, and then putting like a fire pit and stuff. I've got all these ideas, an arbor over it and stuff like that. But I want to make sure that I'm doing stuff that are animal friendly. And I assume there is something I might build that they don't like. I mean, is there... Animals, I assume, adjust to just about anything, though.
For the most part.
Yeah.
I mean, for most animals, there are, of course, a few that don't.
Now, we have skunks in our area.
Oh, yeah.
And I don't want to scare the skunks away. I think my dog does a good enough job of that. But where does skunk go during the winter?
So, it's funny about skunks and a lot of our mammals that don't hibernate. Right now, they be active. They'll be, you know, looking for food and water and all that. But once it starts getting cold, they do kind of go in a temporarily hibernational state called torpor. And they'll stay like that until it warms back up.
Wasn't that a movie, Torpor?
Yeah, I don't know.
Oh, no, that was Tora. I'm sorry.
So anyhow, but yeah, skunks are active right now. Unfortunately.
What do they eat?
What do they eat? Primarily insects. Oh.
They're carnivorous.
They are. I guess. But being in a downtown urban environment, they will get in people's trash.
Whatever it is around.
Bird feeders. So be cautious about that. Like I always tell people, when you attract wildlife like birds and butterflies, you're also going to attract other wildlife like raccoons and skunks.
The ones that want to eat them.
Yeah. Well, eat them or eat your supplies that you're offering.
Yeah.
So, for skunks, what I recommend is get the great horned owl statues that make the noise.
Yes,
because
I've seen those.
Yeah, if you don't, it doesn't work very well, and you have to move it about at least every other day.
So that they don't get used to it.
Because a great horned owl is a predator of a skunk, to a skunk.
Okay. Well, I don't mind the skunks, and I don't mind.
That's good. You know, I had a lot of people always say, "Hey, I want you to get rid of the skunk," or "How do I get rid of them?"
I like skunks, and as long as they don't spray me, I'm good with them. And I don't really want them spraying my dog either. But
so the best thing, if you ever encounter a skunk in the wild, just stay still and stay quiet. They can't see very well. They can't hear very well. And I've had some almost as close to
back
you and
me. Back
away
from them?
Yeah, slowly back away. But as soon as you start, you know, talking, screaming, and of course they're going to freak out.
Yeah.
So, but of course, you know, your dogs don't understand that.
Yeah.
They just want to...
Well, do they have to turn around to spray you, or can they...
They do, primarily. Now, sometimes they'll do like a handstand.
And really?
They can try to spray you, but an accurate spray, yeah, they'll turn around. And they can spray up to 10 to 12 feet.
Oh, so you better be far away.
Yes, and they want to spray around the face because it's like mace. It burns your eyes.
Huh. Well, I like having skunks around. I don't want to be sprayed by one, but I seem to only notice the odor at night. Are they a night
critter? They are nocturnal primarily.
Okay.
Now you may see them throughout the day. You know, that's actually probably another thing to talk about. And I meant to talk about earlier, because we're having, you know, our shorter days.
Yeah.
Just because you may see a raccoon out in the middle of the day doesn't mean 100% that it's automatically sick. There's always a chance.
Well, people think they're sick if they see them?
During the daytime.
Huh.
Because since they're nocturnal.
Yeah.
But because we have in shorter days, they may be out, you know, during that daytime period into the night.
Yeah.
Just finding food, finding different shelter, things like that.
Now, I think I've seen one of them crawling in and out of our sewer. Do they live in the sewers?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Raccoons, opossums.
Rats,
yeah.
I haven't seen any rats up here.
It's a good place to, you know, get away from all the hustle and bustle, away from cars, so... And, you know, you can get in and out really easy. So, yeah, sewers are a good place for wildlife.
I assume raccoons eat whatever is available.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Because I've seen them eat and stuff.
Same with opossums. Forever. They
really
take an advantage, yep.
I was shocked that we had a dog killed an opossum in our backyard. I was shocked that we had an opossum that close to humankind.
Oh, yeah.
But then I've seen another live one wandering through my backyard. My backyard is
it's got all kinds of fun stuff.
Cornucopia of wildlife.
You should put a trail camera.
I would like to do that.
See what's in your backyard.
That would be kind of fun. Maybe I'll do that. They're not very expensive.
The cheapest they range is $30, and then of course they can go hundreds of dollars.
Oh, I'm not going to do that. Yeah, but now I've been putting out, like I told you, suet for the birds and. The squirrels like it too. Is there a specific type of suet to attract a specific type of bird?
The ones that provide more nuts and berries, I notice woodpeckers go after them more.
Okay.
Your plain suet, I don't see as much as the woodpeckers, mainly cardinals, blue jays. But
we do have woodpeckers in our...
But if you have a variety of suet cakes and suet feeders and spread it out, because I know I've mentioned before, especially with the hummingbirds, problem is if you all congregate it in one spot, and that's when you get all your bullies, I call them.
Yeah.
Because they're like, no, it's mine, because, you know, they're...
Oh, especially hummingbirds.
Oh, yeah.
Ooh, they're mean.
But you know, the more you sprawl it out, you know, the
give
less...
Give everybody a chance.
Competition. And give everybody a chance.
Something just came into my head that I was going to ask you about hummingbirds, but I've forgotten.
They're enjoying themselves right now in South America.
Is that where they go?
Yep.
South America?
Yeah.
They like warm weather, I assume.
They do.
Now, they come in, in late June and leave in early September?
Yeah, they'll actually start heading up here in Ohio, usually about mid to late February.
Oh.
Usually about the same time about the monarchs. They usually start about late February with their migration trip.
What are they doing in my evergreen shrubs out front, the hummingbirds?
Right now?
No. I see them in there all the time.
They just hide.
They just hide?
Yeah, they hide.
Somebody told me, they build nests in those. Well...
Typically, no.
I've never seen a hummingbird nest.
I've never seen one in a little evergreen bush, but usually up in a tall, like, oak or maple or something.
So they do have nests?
Yeah, do have nests for their babies.
I guess you'd have
It's almost looks like a small teacup, you know, like old English. It's very, very small. Some hummingbird species do put, like, a little lid, but the ruby-throated we have in Ohio don't do that.
They put a little lid on
it? It's like a half lid. Kind of protects them against the elements.
Sure.
They'll use spider silk. They'll use that kind of the green blue stuff on your trees called lichens.
Uh-huh.
They'll use that.
Huh. I'll be darned. Now, are we having any eagle nestings in the area?
Oh, yeah.
That somebody could go see?
Oh, yeah. Especially if you go around Big Island Wildlife Area outside of Eldon School District. There's one you can see is really good right now, right outside of New Bloomington.
Yeah.
The farmer co-op propane station. I bet if you just park there for a very short time, if you had a good pair of binoculars or a long lens camera, you can see the nest. It's
is that
really
right?
Large.
I used to have one on my website, or not website. I used to pull up decor. And decor had a camera on the eagle's nest. I love watching them. I'm always a little afraid, you know, at fledging time, that you got three and two take off, or all three take off, and only two come back. That's kind of scary. That but that is nature, isn't it?
Yep.
Oh, my.
Their breeding season will start here soon.
I was wondering, what they probably, if I recall correctly, their eggs hatch pretty late February, early March, don't
about,
they?
About that time.
Yeah.
Usually about mid-March.
Yeah, I used to love watching that, and people would come into my office. Obviously, I was heavily involved in my work. And I'm watching these little baby eagles.
Yeah, now the greyhorn owl, they got a step ahead. So right now they're raising, they're young. They breed
now?
Early. Yeah. Now the other owl species, they'll breed in February, but the greyhorn is already, their chicks are about hatched right now or about to hatch.
Why would they do it in such a cold time of the year?
It's just competition, because if everybody's out there at the exact same time looking for food.
Food, yeah.
Yeah, so... You may hear a lot of hooting. Yeah.
Now, isn't the great horn the most dominant owl in this area?
Yeah. They're our largest owl species.
Yeah.
The barred and the screech owl, I mean, you'll find them. Barred owls you'll see a lot around ravine habitats, but screech owls, you can find them downtown Marion. You can find them. Oh,
really?
Yeah. Well, they're a small little owl. They're only about a little bigger than a pop can.
What are they doing downtown? I mean, where do they nest?
Well, as long as they can fit in it, they'll take advantage. As long as there's a cavity or a hole big enough for them to fit in, that's fair game.
That's cool.
You got to think about it. Perfect habitat. I mean, you've got a place to hide, and of course, there's mice and rats all over.
Sure.
So,
yeah.
And screech owls have been documented.
And some of them are animals.
Yeah.
The rats.
Yeah, that's true. They can eat up to 100.
Others are lawyers. But no, I'm sorry. I have lawyer friends.
They can eat up to 123 different things they have documented, from frogs to fish to small mammals, small birds.
They're really loud.
They are.
Oh, my goodness. I think I've told you the story. My son has on their vineyard, they have an owl nest, I guess, a box where the owls.
Oh, okay.
And
they get the whistling screech owl.
Yeah. And boy, are they loud.
They are.
And if you go close to it and mama is around
very
and they're.
Territorial.
Oh, boy, they don't like you being too close.
Yeah.
Now, nothing as bad as that. I told you the story about that hawk that flew right at my face.
Oh, yes.
Out there in the. What do they call that area? The woods.
Woods, yep.
Came right at my face. I had a duck.
I met a guy that got attacked in that area.
Yeah?
Yep.
I bet it was the same rotten one that attacked me.
It tore his eye up really bad.
You're kidding. It actually hit him.
It did. Luckily, it didn't damage the eye, but I mean, a lot of scratches. It looked like he got in a bad fight.
Holy cow. Well, I'm glad I ducked then.
Yeah.
I ducked and it went right over my head. I felt its wing hit my head.
Yeah,
so,
she had a nest right there.
Yeah.
One of our park board members lived in that area. And, they said she would, if anybody got real close, they would attack.
Now, I saw in the same area an opossum running across the backyard. And immediately thereafter, I saw two men with guns chasing him.
Oh, well, that's
And I don't think it's legal to shoot an opossum in the city.
Yeah, in the city. No.
Well, it is outside the city, though. It's in the township.
Yeah, but you still got to watch. There's still your season, you know.
Yeah. Well,
you're allowed to harvest.
And I didn't hear the gun go off, so I think the opossum was outsmarted him or outran him.
Yeah.
They were a little on the pudgy side.
Oh, okay.
Oh, me. Nature has all sorts of ways of getting around us, doesn't it?
Oh, yes. Life finds a way.
Yeah. So. I hope it continues to find a way. The seasons kind of scare me, though, how we've warmed up. I think people are finally admitting that we are having global warming, whether it's natural or not natural. Maybe there was some argument about that. But we are definitely having global warming.
Yeah.
And I'm a little afraid of what's going to happen to our wildlife here. I assume as the warmth moves north, we'll start to see different species and different
That's funny you mentioned
plants,
that.
Yeah.
We are starting to know that.
Really?
In the last 20 years, black vultures is a great prime example of that. They were primarily a southern species, but as you mentioned, as time has progressed on, you know, with the warmer temperatures kind of keep rising up further north, and,
yeah.
I mean, especially in the wintertime, now you can see black vultures in Ohio. And black vultures are more aggressive than the turkey vultures.
Yeah, are they related to the turkey
vultures? Yeah, they're cousins. Uh-huh. It's just, and I think I mentioned...
Kissing cousins?
Yeah, kissing cousins.
Sorry.
They will attack livestock, young livestock, especially ones
really?
That were just born.
They've got to be big to attack a...
Yeah, they're pretty good size, but you always can always tell is the black vulture because they always start with the eyes.
They what with the eyes?
The eyes. They use their beak and start attacking the eyes and plucking their eyes out.
That would be...
That's why a lot of the farmers don't like them. And the turkey vultures, fortunately, get the bad credit because they don't really do that.
Yeah, they eat carrion, don't they?
Yeah, well, I mean, the black vultures do too, but a lot of times black vultures will kill the thing first.
So that they can eat it.
Yeah, and the turkey vultures just will eat whatever is dead.
Yeah.
They really don't...
Actually, they're kind of good for the nature.
Oh, yeah, they're great. They're nature's garbage can, I like to call them.
Yeah.
But, yeah, that's just a great prime example of, you know, with these warmer temperatures, it's really affecting our wildlife. Huh. Black-capped chickadees.
What is that?
So, well, chickadees, they're
it's
really...
a little tiny
bird,
right?
Yeah, a tiny little bird,
right?
And they say their name, chickadee-dee-dee-dee.
Oh.
For a long time in Ohio...
Oh, you sounded like one I've heard.
Thank you. Anything north of Columbus, you would get black-capped chickadees, and anything south of Columbus would be Carolina chickadees. And they look very, very similar. You really have to have a trained eye to know the difference. Well... They're noticing because of the warm temperatures that the black-capped chickadees, their ranges keep going further and further north, and they think within the next decade or so, we may not have black-capped chickadees in the state of Ohio anymore.
Because they will keep going north?
Yeah, because they keep going north because of the temperature change.
I'll be darned. Wow.
So that's just an example. So.
I hope our rivers don't start having alligators in them.
Okay. That would be interesting.
We do have a lot of rivers in the state of Ohio. We have no native lakes, I understand. I guess Lake Erie is the only lake in Ohio. But we do have a lot of rivers.
We do.
Is there a lot of hunting on those rivers? I mean, fishing and turtles and stuff like
your
that?
Your major waterways, you'll get a lot of your waterfowl hunters.
Have you ever tried to fish for a turtle? You know, go up and stick your hand in the bank. And
no, I've never done that. We used to do what's called turtle jugging.
What is that?
So you get a milk crate, and then you put a fishing line, and then you put a hook at the end and put a piece of meat. You put it at the edge of a pond or a wetland, and then they go in it. They grab the bait, and then they flip over, and then you go check it the next day, and you caught yourself a turtle.
Now, are they usually alive after?
Yeah, they're alive. It's just...
Yikes.
So you take them and then you harvest them.
Well, keep your fingers away from their mouth.
Yeah. But I did that when I was younger.
Most of them are snapping turtles, aren't they?
Yeah,
the ones that people
turtles
eat.
And soft shells are the only two species you're allowed to harvest.
They okay.
The others you're not allowed to.
What are the others? A box turtle?
Well, box turtles, they can't swim. So if you put them in water, they'll sink. But yes, box turtle.
They can't swim.
No, they can't.
Oh,
they
I bet there are a lot of kids that have drowned box turtles.
Yeah. Painted turtles, which you'll see a lot on Tallgrass Trail.
Yeah.
Of course. A wood turtle, spotted turtles. So I think we have six different species of turtles.
The ones you just mentioned are all small species, aren't they?
Yeah,
you couldn't get any meat off of them anyway. I mean, just
not much.
But then people eat mourning doves, and I can't imagine you get a lot of meat off of them either.
Wait, no, it's funny you said that. What state was it? Oh, Michigan. Our friends up north just passed a rule. You know, sandhill cranes.
Yes.
So they just passed a rule. They're allowed to harvest them.
Wow.
And
so they must have become more prolific up there, though.
Yeah. Now, in Ohio, like here in Marion County, we do have some killer planes, but I don't think we would have enough to have them to be a game species.
Now, I think I've seen one on the Tallgrass Trail, on that little tributary that goes under the first bridge, I think it is.
That one was probably most likely a great blue heron.
Oh, okay.
So they're in the same family, but they're different.
Okay.
They don't talk
to each other.
Yeah.
Okay.
Sandhill cranes, they're really cool. They're gray and they're really tall and they have a red top.
The one I saw was blue. So. Yeah.
And then their young look like chickens with long legs. They're really cute.
Do they
and
taste
really,
like chicken?
Yeah, maybe. Apparently, that's why people want to hunt them.
I guess.
But I brought it up. I just don't think they have much meat. They're just really. Skinny looking.
Yeah.
They just don't really have much meat to them.
Yeah,
like,
why would
harvest?
You do that? Yeah. I don't know. People like to... I don't understand it. People do like to kill critters that they don't take and use. I've always felt that if you're going to kill a deer or you're going to kill a crane or any animal, use it. Don't
I'm not for killing for fun. If I'm going to harvest an animal, I'm going to use it for,
yeah, yeah,
for meat and other purposes.
Yeah, I don't have any problem with that, but I do have problem with killing for fun.
Yeah,
but
I do too.
That's another story. And I'll talk about that on A Progressive Life, my show where I harangue all the people that call me lib. Anyway, okay, now I've completely run out of things to talk about.
Should we go ahead and talk
about your program.
Yeah. All right. So I mentioned earlier about one of our programs coming up this Sunday on the 2nd. You still have time if you want to participate. Please let me know here soon, because I have, you know, people out in different areas of that 15-mile radius circle. And I forgot to mention, if your house or property is within that circle, you can do it in your backyard.
You can.
Yeah.
Oh.
But if it's not, cool. if it's outside the circle, we can't count it. It's not my rule. It's the Audubon Society's rule. So
they mess up their numbers.
That's right. We're going to actually start our winter hike series, which I know you remember. We're going to be starting them back up for January, February, and March. It'll be the second Saturday. They'll all be from 1 to 4. If you would like a guided nature tour, that will start at 1:30 p.m. We'll meet there at the trailhead, and then we'll go out probably about an hour and a half or so. And just
they aren't all guided?
What now?
They are the hikes aren't all guided?
No, some of it's just a come as you go.
Some
people just come out, want to get a little hike, and then they come back.
Mine was guided by a very smart and handsome tall man.
You. Thank you. That's right. That one will be on the 8th. Now, please be patient. We are going to be setting things up a little bit different. Obviously, due to COVID, we don't want people congregated in that tight little building. So we will kind of have some refreshments, but it will be set up a little bit differently. So we'll be announcing that probably sometime next week. Okay. But again, that will be on the 8th from 1 to 4, but the guided tour itself will start at 1:30. On the January 13th, we're having a Leave It to Beaver program, so we're going to learn about our beaver friends.
That's why you're going to talk about beavers next month with us.
That's right.
So
since they've been very active, I figure it's a good opportunity to go out and talk about them. That will start at 4 o'clock p.m., so we'll kind of start there, show ahead, and kind of talk about them for a little bit, and then we'll go out on the trail and try to find them.
Well, you've got them right by the trail. I know. I've seen their little house.
Yep. On the 20th, at 4 o'clock p.m., we're having our Looking for Bird Nest program. We had to cancel it at the beginning of December because it was raining. So we had a couple of people who were interested in that program again. So we decided we'll continue that for January. So, again, that'll be on the 20th starting at 4 o'clock. And that will start at the trailhead at Tallgrass Trail. And then our last program for the month on the 27th, we're having a winter wildlife tracking program at 4 o'clock p.m. That will start at the Tallgrass Trail Trailhead. So we'll just be going out on the trail and identifying some different wildlife tracks.
My guess is that you have very warm clothes.
Yes, dress for the weather.
Yes.
Now, who knows? If it's like this, you might be wearing shorts.
Yeah. Well, let's hope not.
Yeah.
Let's hope that we get... I mean, we need the seasons.
We do. Yeah. And we need the cold. We need the snow.
Yeah.
Because a lot of our wetlands, like vernal pools, depend on the snow melt for their water depth.
The water, yeah, sure.
And if we don't have much of a snow, then those water depths will be shallow for the spring season. And I know we've talked about, you know, vernal pools in the past.
Yeah, we have. Oh, well, that sounds like a fun month.
Yeah.
And I will mention that on our next program coming up here in about 25 or 30 minutes, my nose is running again. On Swap Shop, I always mention all the different things that people send in, and I'll steal your paper from you so I can mention those again. And it sounds like good fun, but it really can get awfully cold, and so you need to really dress warm, especially if you're a person of my age. I don't think I'd want to be out in 10-degree weather without... Yeah. being really dressed up for
it. And I guess you do make a good point. If it, yes, is extremely cold, if we're on like a level 1 or 2 or whatever with the snow, obviously we'll cancel because unfortunately, because we don't have the largest budget in the world, you know, clearing the trail and the parking lot, I know, like, last February, it was almost the whole month. A lot of people weren't able to use the Tallgrass Trail because we had all that snow and ice. Yeah. Unless you didn't have four-wheel drive, you would have got stuck.
Now, I always mention your phone number. If there's something going on that requires people to call to get approval to come, because during COVID we had to do that. Should I continue to tell people?
No, as of now we don't need to. Okay. Now we'll, if that comes again, we will definitely have to make an announcement.
But they could, well, I assume you would call us if you have to cancel something. Would you do that?
Sure, if it was in the right time. I could do that.
I mean, we'll make the announcement so that people, I know a lot of people listen to when you come on, so I'm sure that if you called us and said, hey, we're going to cancel this, we would pass that along right away.
Well, thank you.
Anyway, you do some fun stuff out there, and I hope people take advantage of it. Have you noticed more and more people coming to your event? Now, I know COVID slowed it.
Oh, yeah, definitely COVID. December, even before COVID, was always a slow season
because
of
sure
the holidays.
Is. Yeah.
Then things kind of pick back up, but then usually spring, summer, that's when a lot of our programs are.
What is your most traveled month? The month that you get the most customers?
Most people. Ooh.
July?
I would say between June, July, and early August.
Yeah.
Because then
it's nice and warm.
That, and then once mid-August, then school starts, and then, of course, kids can't.
And people are allowed to rollerblade and bicycle on the trails.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. The only thing we don't allow is any motorized vehicles, unless it is a motorized wheelchair. We do allow that.
Oh, okay. That's understandable.
Yeah. And then, of course, we do have people who use the trail with vehicles such as law enforcement, our police and wildlife officer, of course, our volunteers. And then if any Boy Scouts or doing an Eagle Scout project, sometimes you drive on the trail.
So do you have a wildlife, I don't know what you call them, policeman that actually
that would be our wildlife officer. That would be Chad Grody. Every county is assigned a wildlife officer.
Does he come out occasionally
and during the, especially the hunting season, like deer season, we give him permission, he'll use it. And then at the lake, we had to sign a contract because we're partnering with DNR. They're going to eventually, on a whim, want to stock our lake with fish.
Oh, fantastic.
And the agreement was that he would be able to patrol
the
lake
for
fishing licenses.
Now, you have, excuse me, my nose has decided to run.
I'll just start running. Oh, yeah. Isn't that nice?
That is great. Now, you had a thing on your website about no hunting within 100 feet, 100 yards?
Yeah, there's a 100-foot corridor.
Okay.
So
they can't shoot across it either,
right?
No,
you cannot hunt on or across.
Yeah.
Now, because there's a 100-foot corridor and because Tallgrass Trail goes through Big Island and private property, once you go beyond that 100-foot corridor, then they are allowed to hunt beside the trail, if that makes sense.
If they have permission of the people that own the property.
Well, But if it's their property, obviously they don't need to. But then the Big Island Wildlife Area, that's owned by the state, so you don't need.
Now, if a deer comes onto your property, can you shoot it without a license?
No. We do not allow any hunting on any of our
even
parks.
Even if it's your own. No, I mean, saying if it comes onto a private person's farm, can he shoot the deer?
No.
Okay.
I think, because that's where it gets tricky. And then when it gets really tricky, so say you were in the state public land, you shot the deer, but the deer ran away.
Oh, yeah.
And he landed and died in the farmer's field. Well,
what do you do?
What do you do? So, I mean, that's when you have to get the wildlife officer, and he's got to come out. And for the most part, he would have to say, okay, well, since you shot it, you know, you can take it. But I've heard some cases, not in Marion, but other part of the state, sometimes they'll... The farmer gets to take it, so...
Well,
there are some of those cases.
I have destroyed 3 automobiles by hitting deer.
I think my wife has 2.
and in each case, I reported it immediately to the state police. And twice I had to go into the state police and sign some stuff or something.
Yeah.
And each time I would go in, they were getting phone calls. Hey, can I take that deer that's dead on the road?
Yeah.
I mean, people see that and they go harvest those deer that...
Yep,
I killed.
You're allowed to.
Yeah.
But as long as you have your tags, yeah, you're allowed to.
Now, I guess I couldn't because I didn't have a tag.
Yeah.
Even though he destroyed my car.
I've had some of my friends who've had their tags hit a deer, and then they've, of course, called the state patrol, and then they said, well, I got tags. I said, all right, well, you can claim it.
Oh, my. Well, I did not claim them, and I'm not a big venison fan anyway. The only thing I like from deer is venison jerky. I like venison jerky. Venison seems to me to be a little bit gamey.
It can, and boy, when you cook it, it definitely has an aroma.
Yes.
Different.
Yeah.
And beef and pork. And
you need to know how to cook it.
Yes.
I've had my son-in-law thinks he's a fantastic cook of venison. He hasn't done it lately. I think probably because everybody said, your venison tastes terrible. But he just didn't have a good recipe for it. That's all. Yeah. All right. Well, we've got about 5 minutes left. Is there anything else you would like to talk about that I haven't allowed you to talk about?
I guess I mentioned earlier about the trail. Just be patient. You know, if we do get a snow period, we're just basically based off volunteers, so we just get some people who get a little impatient with us because they want to, you know, obviously use the trail, which we're glad, but because we don't have people out there plowing the trail, so just be patient. That's all I ask.
If you'll buy me a tractor, I'll come out and do it. What do you do? I mean, your volunteer, do you have equipment for your volunteers?
We do.
Oh,
it's just, you know, it's a long trail, 12.4 miles.
Yeah, that'd be a long time to shovel by hand, I think.
Oh, it would. Actually, one thing I did want to add, I had to pull it up on my phone.
Okay.
So I think they're probably doing it right now, but I want to say it's AEP, one of the electric companies that's there west of the trail.
West of the trail. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. Out around the decliff section, so that'd be about miles 8.
Okay.
They are doing a little bit of construction. They are adding utility poles, those new metal poles instead of the old wooden ones.
Yeah.
They did that on her road right there by our lake this summer. They're going to be doing a little construction, not on the trail, but just right by the trail. So they did notice there were some dead trees that they wanted to knock down, which was going to affect their new power line. So we gave them permission. So when you're out there in that section around DeCliff or west of DeCliff, please don't freak out and think that they're cutting all the trees down. They're just there to only take about two or three.
Do you have warning signs so that people won't get in their way?
I think we might have signs,
or they might have signs. I would think they would want to post signs.
But they won't be on the trail.
They'll
be off the trail, but you just may hear them.
Oh, okay. Yeah. And that would raise a little ire if somebody thought, oh, they're tearing down my favorite trees.
Yeah.
You don't have a lot of trees in that area, do you?
Yeah, it's funny. I mean,
out that far? I haven't been out that far.
We do have some trees, but it's funny. They're growing on about a foot or two of soil because of that old railroad material. And so that's why when we get these strong winds, even healthy trees, they're not even dead trees, and they're falling on the trail.
Is that right?
Yeah.
They don't have any root to the base. Yeah.
Yeah, they don't have much to anchor on.
Yeah. Yeah. Huh. Now, you have a lot of sumac out there
on
the trail.
Yes, we do. We have a lot of sumac.
They grow in pretty crappy soil.
They do.
Yeah, I noticed that. And I used to think all sumac was poison sumac, and that's not true,
nope,
is it?
Nope. The ones that you primarily will see at Tall Grass Trail is the staghorn sumac. I may have to do that one day and bring that as our topic.
Yeah. And I didn't know that until you were my guide for and you said that's sumac, and I asked you if it was poisonous, and you said no.
Actually, it's edible.
Yeah, that's.
Yeah, you can make a lemonade
tea from it. Hard to make lemonade if you don't have any lemons.
Well, yeah, it makes a kind of a lemonade flavor.
Lemony flavor?
Yeah.
Okay.
Its genus name is Rus, and down south they call it Rus tea.
Oh. Well, now, my father used to love sumac tea.
Yeah.
I didn't because I was a kid. But I remember my mom made sumac tea, and I always thought, boy, that's strange. How do you know that it's not poisonous?
So just like poison ivy, which is their cousin, they make the poison sumac has white berries. And instead of being in that tall red cone like the sumac you saw at the trail, theirs kind of dangles a little bit. Kind of almost looks like mistletoe in a way.
Huh. Okay. Well, we're down to our last minute, so I want to thank James Anderson for being on again. We will have you on again next month, I assume. And we will tell everybody about all the projects that are going on every Thursday when I have a swap shop. And I just want to thank all. We had some callers today, which I always forget to tell people what our phone number is, so we don't get a lot of callers. But I'm sure a lot of people want to know what's going on. And that's interesting. My computer just went a little haywire. Thanks for tuning in, and I hope you call back or come back for Swap Shop if you have something to sell. And thanks again, James, and we'll talk to you in a month.
Yep.
All right.
Sounds good.
Have a good day, everybody. Bye-bye.
You're listening to WWGH Radio 107.1 LP, Marion, Ohio, the place to talk. From legendary comedian Kay Ballard performing the fast food song.
Oh, there's one song that you like. I feel that, you know, fast foods have ruined the world.
Oh.
On the Champs-Élysées, on the Appian Way, there's McDonald's. By the tomb of King Tut, there's a chuck full of nuts and McDonald's. At the Scala, they sing by a big Burger King where the styrofoam boxes go sweet. What's the use? What's the hell? I just heard Taco Bell went and franchised the wing at the Louvre. You know, I could go on and on and on, but that's it. I love things that are topical and that are kind of true.
The legendary actress and the voice of Ursula from The Little Mermaid, Pat Carroll.
What would we do without gossip, for heaven's sake? Oh, it's naughty, but it certainly fulfills a certain catty side of all of us. Oh, good Lord. When you think of the gossip sessions you've had with friends over the years, it's wonderful.
Yeah.
It's like putting your hands in front of a lovely fire.
I
would do anything you want, Scott. You know I enjoy being on your show. But just let me talking and I keep going.
To the oldest working actor in Hollywood, 101-year-old Norman Lloyd.
Now, did you like that, Norman, when that edict came down? Did you like to be told to stop driving?
Well, I tell you, I liked the idea of driving, so I felt deprived that he was saying you can't drive anymore. But I enjoyed the authority with which he said to me, you cannot drive anymore. I thought, well, things have lined up pretty good now. I'm the kid and he's the old man. And, you know, it's continued on every level since. So I feel I'm in my second child and I've got a new father.
Norman,
He has no humor about it at all. He says this is the way it is. And, you know.
WWGH Radio 107.1 FM, The Talking Place. Streaming live on the internet at www.wwgh1071.com. Search for us on Facebook by typing in WWGH Marion, Ohio 107.1 FM and clicking like for exclusive content. Programming on WWGH Radio 107.1 FM is supported by CRT Mechanicals. Address 2842 Marion Waldo Road. Telephone number 740-225-4495. Webpage crtmechanicals.com.
Hey everybody, this is Pastor Steve Whitaker from Community Christian Fellowship. I am the host of the Pastor Spot here at the radio station. We are on live Friday mornings at 11:15. It is replayed Wednesday at 3 o'clock and also Sunday morning at 8 o'clock. Also, at 12:15 on Sunday mornings, we have the message from Community Christian Fellowship, and that plays live on Sunday morning at 12:15. Also, we'd like to let you know that we invite you and would love to have you come to the church. We are a Bible-teaching, Bible-believing church. that is very, very much focused on outreach and reaching outside of the church and loving those around us. Our service times are at 10:30 on Sunday morning and Bible school hours at 9:30. We have midweek services, a lot of kids programs, and yeah, I just invite you to really come and get plugged in. We are at 209 East Water Street in Prospect, and our phone number there is 740-494-2222. If you call and leave me a message, I promise I'll get back with you. God bless everybody. Have a good day, and we'll hear you as you call in and have some questions for us on the radio, and invite you to do that all the time at 740-383-9944.
The Marion Towers Apartments are a supporter of WWGH Radio 107.1 FM. Address 400 Delaware Avenue, phone number 740-387-9050. Programs on WWGH Radio 107.1 FM are brought to you by Williams Grass Cutters. Telephone number 740-272-0062. Website WilliamsGrassCutters.com. Facebook page at Williams Grass Cutters. Email w.grasscutters@gmail.com.
And here are your morning sports scores for Wednesday, December 29th. The Cardington Lincoln Pirates defeated the Delaware Christian Eagles 49-37. The Elgin Comet girls basketball team defeated the Gillian Christian Eagles 61-12. The Cardington Lincoln Pirate girls basketball team defeated the Bucyrus Redmen 79-25. The Ridgedale Rocket girls basketball team defeated the Grove City Christian Eagles 46-19. The Pleasant Spartan girls basketball team defeated the Ridgemont Golden Gophers 79-19. And that's it for today's sports here on WWGH 107.1.
OhioNotary.us is a proud supporter of WWGH Radio. Telephone number 740-531-2326. Website OhioNotary.us, providing notarization services of any document anywhere in Mid and Central Ohio at homes and businesses. OhioNotary.us, a proud supporter of WWGH Radio.
Hi, this is Dick Schaffrath, and you're listening to WWGH Radio, 107.1 FM, streaming live on the internet at www.wwgh1071.com. Find us on Facebook by searching WWGH Marion, Ohio, 107.1 FM, and clicking like for exclusive content.
It's now time for the obituary report on WWGH Radio.
Melissa M. Deerdurf, age 41, of Marion, passed away on December 23rd. She is survived by her daughters, brother, and nephew. A private celebration of her life will be held at a later date. You may leave an online condolence at cremationservicesofohio.com for Melissa M. Deerdurf of Marion. Betty Lou Woodyard, age 72, of Marion, passed away on December 27th. She is survived by her children and siblings. Burial will take place in Kentucky. You may leave an online condolence at boydafuneralmarion.com for Betty Lou Woodyard of Marion. James Robert Hill, age 91, of Marion, passed away on December 25th. He is survived by his daughter, grandchildren, great-grandchildren, siblings, nieces, and nephews. His family will greet friends from 1:30 to 3 p.m. on Thursday the 30th at the Epworth United Methodist Church, 249 East Center Street. Services honoring his life will follow there at 3 p.m. with Reverend Mary Jo Yeakel officiating. You may leave an online condolence at SnyderFuneralHomes.com for James Robert Hill of Marion. Michael S. Morse, age 66, of Marion, passed away on December 19th. He is survived by his brothers, nieces, nephews, and friends. A memorial service will take place at a later date. You may leave an online condolence at cremationservicesofohio.com for Michael S. Morse of Marion. Doreen Jane Hilt, age 62, of Marion, passed away on December 21st. She is survived by her husband, brothers, and sister. There will be no services at this time. You may leave an online condolence at cremationservicesofohio.com for Doreen Jane Hilt of Marion. Roxanne Cecile Rose, age 67, of Marion, passed away on Friday, December 24th. She is survived by her husband, daughter, son, grandchildren.